Yo, real quick,
We'll
is the
see.
NBA actually going to do All-Star game or no?
Man, if they do an All-Star game, that's like the dumbest thing ever. It's so
Yeah.
stupid.
Yeah, like what's the point?
Yeah.
There's no crowd. Who cares?
TV money, man. That's it. Purely for TV money.
Mean, if they want to be safe, putting all these players in one place is just not smart.
And then having them go off to their respective teams.
Yeah. And it's not even like all these players. It's the best players in the league. You're going to
Yeah.
risk putting LeBron, Giannis, Steph Curry all in the same market and then sending them off again? Like, it's not like they're going to bubble before and after.
I don't think the players are
Yeah.
going to agree to it because right now, I think they announced that the All-Star break's like 2 weeks long. So
Yeah.
based on all the restrictions they already have, and they can't see anybody, and they basically have to live in like their own little bubble at home, they're going to want to go out and have a vacation. So I don't think they're going to do it. And then like on a different note, based on the reports, it seemed like Caris LeVert had cancer in his kidney, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the
So he
reports
did
came out
actually
today
get
saying that he
cancer.
actually had cancer in it. So basically saved his life, that trade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck, how did we not talk about that?
Next time.
Well, yeah, whatever. It
Can
might
you
be the
see?
intro. What's up, everybody? And welcome back to the Hoops Corner. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got the Iceman himself. Josh Cohen, how you doing?
Feeling as cold as a DeMar DeRozan playoff run.
I mean, I according to our stats, it's not that bad, Josh. So you're not that cold right now.
Yeah, that's not what I remember.
That's not what any Raptors fan remembers. The banger in the paint, Rajan Walia, how you feeling?
You know what? I'm feeling pretty good because this is the first year that it looks like a big man might win MVP.
Which big man are you talking about? Luka Doncic is a big fella these days, isn't
No, I'm talking about the other Eastern European, Nikola Jokic.
he? Just had to distinguish what kind of Eastern European he is, eh?
Yes,
Do you
absolutely.
remember which?
Of
Do you know
course.
what he is?
Yes, he's Russian, isn't he?
Right, Shaq.
Oh man, shouts to Shaq, apparently.
You think Shaq
All right,
is
well.
trolling, or is he just that incompetent at this point?
Oh, well, dude, we'll get into that later. I have a lot of thoughts on Shaq these days. But I want to start off with Kobe. It's been a year since the helicopter crash in Calabasas. And, recording on, obviously, January 26th. We just got to go through some old memories, man. I want each of us to throw out a memory, either on the court, off the court, something that you remember about the legacy. Obviously, Josh, you're a big fan of Mamba mentality, so why don't you start this bad boy off?
For me, my fondest memory of Kobe was probably my favorite in-game dunk of all time. I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but just in terms of him playing against the Knicks in Madison Square Garden, full arena, probably like overcrowded. They probably had people in the standing room only, just like filling the arena, and you could sort of like feel the atmosphere through the television. Also, Kevin Harlan was on the call too, so that also helped. Because he hypes it up to a whole nother level when he's on the games, obviously. And this is like pre-Reggie Miller being with Harlan as well. So that also helped out the broadcast too. But, Kobe got the ball on the right baseline. He faced up against Latrell Sprewell. Gave him a little okie doke type of a move, a little shimmy move. Dribbled one time to the baseline. Did an up and under dunk and reversed it on the opposite side. And I think Kevin Harlan gave one of those calls where he was like, "Kobe Bryant with no regard for human life." And like that whole moment, just like it was totally enthralling. Like you could just feel the electricity in the building. The electricity just like sort of flowed through me in that moment. I got up from my seat and I just like let out like the biggest roar and cheer, even though I wasn't a big Kobe fan. But that moment was just incredible. You hear like the crowd just going crazy. And this is a time where like obviously Knicks fans are always gonna cheer for the Knicks, but they're smart enough to realize greatness, and you could just hear in that moment like they really truly appreciated what was, I think, one of the more special moments in Kobe's career.
Yeah, if you've never done this before, you need to watch clips of either Kevin Harlan's best calls or Mike Breen's best bangs. Man, just watching those clips alone gets you so hyped up. Like, you can do anything after watching those videos.
Absolutely. And honestly, like, my second favorite Kobe dunk was also with Kevin Harlan announcing the call. It was in the playoffs against the Minnesota Timberwolves, where same sort of play, like Kobe got on the right baseline, you know, took a couple dribbles. Kevin Garnett, I think Rasho Nesterovich also came over.
Yep. Yep.
And he basically did the same type of dunk, but this time he windmilled it. He did like a reverse windmill on the baseline. And then Kevin Harlan said something even more more insane. And it was just another just absolutely crazy moment with, you know, the crowd just going crazy despite being in Minnesota.
Yeah. All right, Raj, what do you got?
Well, honestly, especially watching basketball now and seeing a lot of offensive, great offensive performances, I have to go back to the 81-point game. It actually happened, 14 years ago or 15 years ago, a couple of days ago, like in January. And Kobe scored 81 points, obviously, against the Raptors. We all remember that number. And the craziest thing about it is he played and did that in an era where, like, if a team went to 120, that was like a big night for that team. And now we're watching teams continuously scoring in the hundreds. We've seen some great offensive performances where Kyrie or KD can get to 50 easily, and other players can really, like, put up numbers. But to score 81 points is just something that, again, whenever I see that number, I just smile, because that number always makes me think of Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, I still remember going to school the next day, and one of our friends, Ben, like, he caught me first thing when I walked in the school, and he was like, "Yo, did you see Kobe?" It's like, "What? What do you mean?" He's like, "Yo, he dropped 81. And, like, legit, first thing I did before school started that morning, I went to the computer lab, hit NBA.com, watched every single bucket. And I think, like, at least once every week for the whole year, I just watched those clips over and over and over again. I just couldn't get over it. Like, 81, man, how incredible is that?
That was also the infamous game where, allegedly, I haven't gone back and actually, like, watched the Raptors broadcast, but allegedly Chuck Swirsky, known for, you know, bringing out the salami and cheese when he thinks the game is over, brought out the salami and cheese, I believe, in the early part of the third quarter when the Raptors were up 18 to 20 points. And then that's when Kobe started to go on his, you know, really huge scoring run. And that was pretty much the only time that allegedly he brought it out a bit too early out of the fridge.
Yeah, you can never test Kobe, man. That was the same year that Kobe had, I think it was a couple of weeks prior, where he had 60 and three quarters, right, against Dallas?
He had 62.
And he ended up sitting for 62?
Yeah.
And then he ended up sitting for the Mavericks fourth quarter, in the right? third quarter. Like, I think it was 62 to 60, Kobe versus the Mavericks.
Yeah.
Wow. That's insane. What an animal, man. That's a good one, Raj. Actually, one of mine is also, like, Kobe just loved ripping on the Raptors. Like, every Raptors fan knows, the Raptors have a long pass of getting dominated by every All-Star. And occasionally that random-ass player, Hugh Jeremy Lamb.
Eddie House.
Oh, Eddie House, a legend. But one of mine is Kobe. They were in Staples at the time. This must have been, well, they had Rudy Gay. So whatever years that was, like 13. You know what I'm talking about, right? That play where Kobe's at the top waiting. He's going to beat Allen Anderson. And then for some reason, Aaron Gray just goes up and presses Kobe at half court and essentially just sets a screen on him. Like, what are you doing, Aaron Gray? You should have known better. But then just, you know, Kobe being Kobe just took over that whole game, brought it to overtime, won it in overtime. And then my other one was, I think I talked about this before as well. In the 03 All-Star game, Kobe just picked Jason Kidd's pocket right at half court, goes for the dunk, no big deal. And then, I still swear by this, that Kobe intentionally missed the second out of his three free throws to take it to overtime, just to put on a show for the fans. I don't know if he did it or not, but it certainly felt that way. And I remember talking to my friends at the same time, and, you know, we all felt the same way. It was just like Kobe being Kobe. It was sick. So there's that. There's that little Kobe Bryant moment. But let's talk about something more contemporary, guys. Because, Josh, you already teased this. Shaq just chirping Donovan Mitchell for no goddamn reason on on Inside the NBA. Just the weirdest thing. So Donovan Mitchell, you know, has a big win on Inside. Everyone obviously wants to watch Inside because that's where Chuck and Shaq, EJ and Kenny are. And Shaq just comes out and straight up says, "You know, Donovan, I love your game. You're one of my favorite players to watch, but I don't think you have what it takes."
Part of this is Shaq. I said tonight that you are one of my favorite players, but you don't have what it takes to get to the next level. I said it on purpose. I wanted you to hear it. What do you have to say about that?
All right. That's it.
That's it?
All right. That's it.
Okay, cool.
I mean,
I wanted you to hear it.
I've been hearing, well, Shaq, I've been hearing that since my rookie year. You know, I'm just going to get okay, better and well, do what I do.
Good.
At the end well, of the day.
Well, that's what I wanted you to hear you say. Yes, love sir. Your game, brother. Keep it up.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, like
yeah, it was a very awkward moment. Go ahead, Rush.
Yeah, that's all I have to say. And it was just awkward because he just outright said it, and then like there was just a pause, and then Donovan's like, "Okay, like, what do you want me to say?" Like, obviously, he just had a great game, a big win for the Jazz, and again, Shaq seems to like want to start beef with certain players. He obviously took a lot of shots at Rudy Gobert. About that massive contract, and maybe he has something against the Utah Jazz, but it just comes across as like unnecessary. Like, if he had said a comment being like, "Hey, like sometimes I question whether you have the next gear to like lead your team in the playoffs, and it's good to see a performance like this. Like, what do you say to the doubters like me?" Like, ask a question instead of just saying like, "Hey, I dissed you, but I wanted to tell you in person that I dissed you."
Do we think it's just Shaq trying to stay relevant at this point?
Yeah, I think he's just taking on the troll role, right? Because, you know, with like we've had this talk about inside the NBA so many times. If you're like a basketball junkie like we are, there's no way you're going to these guys for actual analytics, right? You're not looking to these guys to break down the game because you know what everyone is going to say. Shaq is going to say the big man needs to dominate inside and give him 25 and 15 every game at least, 28 and 15. That's what I did. That's what I did in my heyday, and I wasn't even that good. You know, Barkley's going to say the same thing. You can just do you. Just be happy with yourself. And Kenny Smith, like, you know, who actually listens to Kenny Smith on that show? Let's be real. Other than EJ. So, I don't know. I don't really... There's no way you can actually look at these guys analytically and be like, oh, yeah, I need to know what Shaq's... I need to know how Shaq is going to break down Donovan Mitchell's game, because why would you even care?
Again, I think like I agree with what Josh says. I think Shaq's just trying to stay relevant. And on top of that, like he obviously is a Hall of Fame player, won several championships. He's respected by the NBA community. Like he has his accolades. I just think that if he had said a reason for why he doubted Donovan Mitchell can take it to the next level and just actually opened up a conversation instead of just saying like a fact, like, this is what I said, I want to say to your face. Like, how is Donovan supposed to respond to that? Like, obviously, Donovan had a great playoffs last year. I think, obviously, Jamal Murray got maybe the best out of him in last year's playoff bubble, but he also played lights out. He's improved every year. His team has made the playoffs. They've always been a dangerous team. So, I think Donovan Mitchell has proved it enough, but Shaq just... I don't know. Shaq's just being Shaq. He's kind of he's not the most insightful guy.
Yeah, nobody really watches that show for the basketball talk, to be honest. Like, everyone just watches for the comedy. I mean, it's nice when they can mix both and they can go back to their playing days and talk about like certain you know, instances where certain things happen that you haven't heard about before. That is absolutely hilarious, obviously, like different locker room items and, you know, different things that happen during games that you just never hear about otherwise. But in this instance, like, you don't want Shaq turning into Skip Bayless at the same time too, because that's basically what he's becoming now. Like, the fact that he didn't even know Christian Wood's name and didn't know where Nikola Jokic was from. I mean, what did Christian Wood call him again? A casual. After his first question.
Casual.
And he called Christian Wood Christian Woods. And he said he didn't have any idea that he had that type of game after he had like a 26 and 15 game on TNT. So I think Shaq should be doing the who he play for segment at the start of each year instead of Charles at this point, because he would probably get the exact same score.
That would actually be a great test, man. I want to see Shaq do that. Because every year they rip on Barkley so hard for it, right?
And it is hilarious. Like, Charles being in that role, like, he's obviously the punching bag and he rolls with it and he's hilarious like that. Shaq isn't that type of person, obviously. Like, anytime you question him, he just points at his fingers, oh, I got the five rings right here, you know. Or four, what is it, four rings or five rings?
Four. Four. Yeah, I got four. Kobe has five.
Where's your rings, Charles? Where's your rings? That's all he does every time. So, I don't know. At this point, he's basically becoming, you know, a guy that... It's really hard to listen at this point. Like, the last couple of seasons, he's actually been pretty decent in terms of his chemistry with those guys in the set. But his lack of overall basketball knowledge is really seeping through as he makes all these incoherent statements like he's done the last 3 weeks now with Jokic, then Wood the next week, and now Mitchell. I wonder what's going to happen this week. Who do they have on this week?
Maybe it's like the running joke for him, though. Like, you're right. You're probably right. This is probably just a way for him to stay relevant, right?
Yeah. I mean, this week they have the Clippers in Miami and then Portland and Houston. So maybe by, you know, in 2 days from now at around, 1 o'clock in the morning when they're interviewing Christian Wood again, maybe Shaq will actually know his name this time.
Oh, man, that's not fair. He's going to say something about Enes Kanter.
Yeah, for sure. Watch. He's going to rip into him and then say that Nurkic should be playing and completely disregard the fact that Nurkic has like a broken wrist.
He's going to be there looking for CJ McCollum, but instead it's Gary Trent.
I think he's going to be watching that game thinking to himself like, oh, why is DeMarcus Cousins on the bench behind this no-name? Christian Woods, who's that?
Barbecue chicken alert. I think also a big part of it can be the fact that Barkley is known for maybe some of those no-thinking comments. And I think he might want some of that attention, some of that praise. And obviously people love Barkley because he's so, let's just say, raw in his analysis, that Shaq's probably trying to replicate that to a degree.
Yeah, but the thing about Barkley is he doesn't take himself seriously. And everything just rolls off his back, and he makes fun of himself after every single segment, right? Whereas Shaq is just so sensitive about everything. Like, Barkley seems like the type of guy you can go to the bar with every night, be absolutely entertained, and you can have a drink with him anytime, and you're going to have, like, the greatest time in the world. And, you know, Shaq obviously has his moments where he's absolutely hilarious. Like, he's probably one of the funniest athletes that we've ever seen, but in this specific role in the studio, like, sometimes he takes his sensitivity to a whole other level.
Imagine telling Shaq that he didn't win enough. Like, on any of these like instances where he's telling a player they're not good enough, be like, yo, weren't you the most dominant big man ever? Why do you only have 4 rings and Kobe has 5? Just press him, you know? How many rings does Duncan have? 5?
Yeah, like, somebody actually should go back at him and see what he does if his head would just, like, combust on live TV.
Big Diesel.
Oh, man. All right, well, let's get into some actual talk, because, guys, we got to talk about the Utah Jazz here. They've won 8 straight. We're going into, well, it's Tuesday night, so they're playing the Knicks tonight. I guess we'll see what happens. I'm pretty confident that they'll win. I don't really think that's going to be an issue for them. But we're looking at a team with a top 5 defensive and offensive efficiency, and they've completely changed their offensive style. So for the past couple of years, you know, the question's always been, who's going to be Utah's second scorer? Who's going to help Donovan Mitchell on offense? Apparently it's a team thing now, because they're second in three-point percentage, first in three-pointers made, and third in three-pointers attempted, just behind Toronto and your beloved Toronto Raptors. That means that they're shooting more threes than 27 other teams? That's crazy for a team that was essentially built around Rudy Gobert like 3 years ago or 4 years ago. And we're talking about guys like Jordan Clarkson is shooting over 40%. Jordis Niang, remember that name, also shooting over 40%. The one guy who's not shooting over 40% that you would expect to is Bojan Bogdanović, who's coming off a wrist surgery, right? And we can pretty much expect him to shoot close to 40 by the end of the year. And so you're looking at an offense that's been completely redone since the bubble after Donovan Mitchell's crazy run. And to back it all up, their defense is so sound right now because they brought back Derek Favors, who was there when Donovan Mitchell first came into the league. So you reestablish a chemistry with one of the better defensive big men in the league, and you bring in a strong backup for your defensive anchor who's starting right behind Gobert, who also just got paid, doesn't need to worry about his contract anymore. We all thought that Gobert would just go into chill mode after getting paid, but he's actually taking it back to another level. He's actually playing defense again, which we didn't really see out of him last year. And now you're getting lineups where Favors is playing with the starters. Gobert is playing with the bench guys to mix things up against their opponents. And oh yeah, Mike Conley finally fits back on this team. And so, I don't know, Josh, like, we've both been proponents of the Jazz basically since last year, or 2 years ago by this point. Do you think they have what it takes to actually get to the finals this year, or at least get to the conference finals?
I think they might be able to make the conference finals, because this year is, you know, it's obviously been very random, and they have the talent to actually get to that level. They have a camaraderie, because these guys have played together the last couple of years. The biggest thing that's changed with them, I think, is Conley's finally gotten comfortable. Last year, he did not play well at all. I think he was like 41% from the field overall. This year, he's at 46%. He's averaging way more assists per game. His two-point percentage is way up too. So he's hitting those little floaters in the lane. Whereas last year, you could tell, like, when he took those little ready floaters, he was shooting like 30% from the field. I'm not sure he was really fully healthy last year. And then also, he was just getting used to being like a secondary guy, which he's never been before. Like, you know, for the guys that have been in that role later on in their career, it takes some time for them to really establish themselves and really get used to that type of role when you've been, you know, the man as like the primary pick and roll ball handler for all your career. But they've basically taken Houston's game plan and used it with much better shooting instead of like having these random guys that are like super inconsistent from the field. And everyone right now is just hitting their shots. Like, you're not having to rely on guys like Ben McLemore and Daniel House every single night. You got guys that are proven in this league to be able to hit these shots from the perimeter, like, you know, Mike Conley, Jordan Clarkson's had a really good season as well, Joe Ingles, guys like that. And it's just all, it's working right now, but I'm still not totally convinced they're going to be like an elite team come playoff time.
Yeah, talk about taking Houston's style. I think the one big difference is they really, on defense, have a big anchor in Gobert, and they drive everything and let other teams drive inside and let Gobert mop up. And I think, again, as Josh mentioned, I think they're going to go as far as they can shoot. And I think the better part about their offense is they have a little more variety with not Mitchell just having to carry the offense and kind of ignite all the possessions. And they have a few other playmakers with Bogdanovich, Clarkson off the bench. Joe Ingles can run some offense. So they're a dangerous team. I think if they do run into injuries, that might be problematic. And I also think they're a bit old. They don't have any young guys that really provide a lot of energy.
Wait, you mean other than Donovan Mitchell?
Yeah, other than him. But again, I think your team wants to have like one or two more like young guys who are very athletic. That can really, because again, if you look at their team, like, they're a bit, they're well coached, they're very good defensively. I just think they lack a bit of explosion, a little of athleticism.
Yeah, and they've got a really good top seven. Like, you have Clarkson and Favors both coming off the bench who can both play 25 minutes a game. And obviously, Favors has really good chemistry with, you know, Joe Ingles off the bench too. Like, he's another guy that hasn't played as well this year, even last year. But he's another guy that shows up in the playoffs, and you can rely on him to run a pick and roll and run some of your offense through him. So honestly, they have a really good top eight. I should have said top eight, but I think that they do need one more piece if they're really going to think of themselves as a contender. I think they need like a wing off the bench that can provide, you know, 20 to 25 really solid minutes that you can rely on. Maybe even a guy like Rudy Gay, honestly, like, he's been pretty solid this year for the Spurs. So just a veteran guy like that, that you can throw into the lineup and they'll just fit seamlessly. And they also obviously need Donovan Mitchell to play at the same level he did in the playoffs last year. Now you have Boyan back, another, you know, high-level player at the forward position. They can really get to the conference finals as long as everything goes right. But I still think there's a few teams ahead of them.
Yeah, and the reason I mentioned the kind of athleticism is I really don't know who they expect to put on Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, LeBron James.
Well, Royce O'Neal is a pretty good like wing defender as it is. He's long, he's strong enough to stay with those guys. Like, he's not a hack on defense, right? Like, he's definitely someone who can actually put pressure on them. But you're right, against a team like the Clippers, who have two dominant wing players, then it will obviously be an issue. But I see what you guys mean. I mean, a guy like Rudy Gay would be perfect. I mean, shout out to Rudy Gay. Getting love twice on the pod is like probably a record. I've never talked about him this much before.
I think another player that, again, just for good old time's sake, I'm going to bring up Jake Crowder. He could be another body that they could use.
Everybody's favorite Jake Crowder. You don't like Jake Crowder on this team, Josh? Come on, man.
No. They've already tried that, too. It didn't really work.
Was he there last year or 2 years ago?
I think two years ago.
He was there, right? 2 years ago, yeah.
How much do you have to feed Gobert going forward? Because, you know, we saw last year when he and Mitchell didn't get along at the beginning. It was a lot of, you know, Mitchell trying to integrate everyone else onto the team. Gobert getting fussy that he wasn't getting the looks inside either through pick and rolls or, you know, just standing in the dunker position, not getting his dump offs. So what happens if, you know, he gets fussy again, he starts crying again, that he's not getting the touches that he needs and, you know, their defense falls off as a result, right? Like last year he was being fussy and their defense was an all-time low after like 4 or 5 years of having him as a starter. So how do you keep him in check?
Well, there's 214 million reasons why he's going to be kept in check. And that's the simple answer. I think he wanted those stats to justify a big contract.
Yeah, I think at this point, like maybe Rudy has grown up now and he realizes what his role is. He doesn't have to be the guy that, you know, gets the ball multiple times per quarter and puts up 16 to 20 points a game. Like right now he's averaging, 12 points a game. And he's only playing 30 minutes a game because the Jazz are destroying everybody. So, I mean, if they can save him, and he doesn't have his one injury that he seems to have every season where he misses like a month or so, and he's fresh come playoff time because they can play Derek Favors because Favors is a really good, you know, defensive player, then the Jazz should be better for it come playoff time. Like it's the same type of thought process I have with the Celtics. And then not bringing back Kemba Walker earlier, not playing him a lot of minutes early, but now that he's back, like they're not playing him heavy minutes yet, but they're trying to save his and preserve his body for when it matters.
Yo, Kemba's been looking great with the Celtics, eh? He's looking spry. He actually said he's healthy and feeling like he doesn't have hurt knees all the time. It's going to be huge for them.
Yeah, my prediction of the Celtics going to the finals is looking pretty good right now.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Not really, though. Still going to be Philly.
No.
Philly, man. Watch Philly.
Unless they get Ben Kyle Simmons, Lowry.
Ben Simmons will attempt 1 3-pointer in that series. How about that?
And they're going to lose on that one shot.
Imagine. It's the three that he needs to tie the game, and he just won't take it.
It's a Carlton moment. He steals a ball away from Joel, chucks it up, and misses everything.
Oh, man, that'd be so sad. All right, well, let's move on away from Utah, because Shams Charania came out today with a little bit of a possible trade coming down in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully it actually happens so we can get these guys on, you know, some more love in here. But Lonzo Ball and J.J. Redick are possibly on the market, as in their team's inquiring. Their team's looking to see what they got to do to get these kind of guys. I mean, Lonzo, obviously a good defender, lead ball handler, and surprisingly good defender, right? He's got those active hands. He's always moving around, moving his feet, and he's great at picking off passes. JJ, obviously, we know he's been in the league for what seems like 40 or 50 years, and still one of the best three-point shooters in the league. What else can you say, right? Raj, what kind of team would need these kind of players?
I think there would be a few teams that would be interested in Lonzo and Redick, but I really don't see these both those players going to a contender, especially because, like, if they're packaged together to get a bigger asset or a few first-round draft picks, I don't think Lonzo is kind of the solution that they need. But I can see that some teams might look to upgrade their point guard position, add a bit of depth, and add a bit of shooting. But again, like, the team that I can think of right off the top of my head that could use these players right now would be a team like Orlando. Just have a bit more spacing and a bit of like a bit better point guard play, especially with Markel Fultz being out. But I really struggle to see Lonzo going to a playoff team and making a big impact. I think his point in his career that he's really struggling to show teams why he's worthy of a starting point guard position in the NBA now. And he's kind of heading in the same path as MCW did.
I think Lonzo would be really good on a team that, you know, doesn't rely on him to be a primary ball handler. To where he can run it in a pinch, sort of like what with, you know, going back to Utah, what they sort of did with Ingles, you know, a couple of years ago, where, you know, at times they'd use him in pick and roll and he'd make the right decisions. But overall, they weren't relying on him. So I think a team like Dallas makes a lot of sense for Lonzo Ball, because he's shown that he can be a really solid defensive player when he can focus on defense. And Dallas is trying to build a defensive team. Like, they sort of gave up what they did last year, being the best offense of all time, and bringing in more defensive type players, you know, Josh Richardson coming in as well. And I think he'd be really solid as like a secondary or third guy that can run offense for you behind Luka and obviously behind Kristaps when they use him in that type of role where he's, you know, a secondary scorer, not so much a secondary ball handler. But I think Lonzo fit really well there, and he's really improved his spot up shooting overall the last couple of years, and he's going to get a ton of shots on that type of team too. So he could focus more on defense in that role and then focus more on the stuff that he's good at, not having all the pressure on him to be, you know, a primary ball handler, which is what he's been for pretty much his entire career.
I think another interesting spot where Lonzo could end up is the Phoenix Suns behind Chris Paul, especially because they have a lot of young players and weapons that they want to... They need the ball in their hands. Like, they obviously have Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, who they expect to build their franchise around long term. And having Lonzo play in that higher paced offense, learning from Chris Paul, could be beneficial. And he would be kind of running the second unit, and you could kind of save Chris Paul for hopefully when they make the playoffs.
I think the biggest thing that we have to factor into this is, like, he's up for his first contract, his first major contract this season. So I think whoever trades for him is going to want to see him as, like, you know, a long-term piece. And I don't think you trade for him to be a backup in that scenario. You're not going to give up anything for him to be a backup. And I think right now his value is pretty low. Like, those last, you know, few games that he's played have really lowered his three-point percentage. So right now he's at 29% overall. And, I can see a team like the Knicks honestly trading for him, because it sort of makes sense, right? Like, I think he fit pretty well there too. Like, they're building a team with limited shooting. He hasn't really provided a lot of that this year. He's young. And, you know, he provides some like, the media would love him being there with his family, obviously, right? Like, he really be putting the spotlight in that scenario.
Oh my God.
You said he provides limited shooting, like it's a positive.
Oh, no.
Come on.
No, the Knicks love that though.
Can you imagine a backcourt with RJ Barrett and Lonzo Ball? Like, how ugly are those shots?
I mean, it's probably better than a backcourt of RJ Barrett and Alfred Payton, you know?
Yeah, look who the Knicks start. They start four non-shooters, so he fit in pretty well right now. Like, Lonzo looked pretty good last year as a three-point shooter, but again, this year he's been very inconsistent, so.
Lonzo automatically turns into the best shooter on the team as soon as he gets there.
He might be.
Behind Julius Randle, of course.
Of course.
Behind the god Julius Randle himself. Before you jump in, Raj, what about a team like the Clippers, who we've long been saying need another ball handler? Someone who can actually distribute the ball and, you know, not take up shots from, obviously, Kawhi and PG and apparently Serge Ibaka out there. Why not LA? Bring him
what
home.
What do they trade for him, though? Like, yeah. The Pelicans are going to want at least a first-round pick back for him, I think. And I think the Knicks make a lot of sense because they have Dallas's picks. And you're probably not going to get better than, like, a mid to late round first round pick, especially in this draft, which is supposed to be really good for a guy like Lonzo Ball, who still has potential, but he hasn't played well this year. So I think his value has lowered this year versus, you know, before the season started.
Yeah. And again, I think you hit the nail right on the head when you said that teams that are going to trade for him, if they're going to give up an asset, they want to see him in a long-term future role. And he's looking for a big extension probably. And I don't think he's shown enough for a contending team to give up something and then hope to re-sign him to a long-term deal where he's a starting point guard. Like, I just don't see that for him, and that's why I think he's heading down the MCW path.
I think another couple teams that make sense are, you know, a couple of pretty bad teams, honestly. Like, Detroit, I think, makes a lot of sense with their first round pick this year. You know, Killian Hayes, he's not ready yet. Like, he showed that this year already, even before he was injured. I think he's shooting like 24% from the field or something crazy like that.
But DeLon Wright, Josh.
Yeah.
Back with Coach Casey.
Oh, God.
It's a match.
He had a good game last game, though.
He did.
The one good game he had all year. Yep.
Yo, he gets steals.
And the other
he
team,
steals.
I think, is Chicago. I think Chicago makes a lot of sense, too. Because right now, Chicago,
like,
even though they're really good on offense, their defense is absolutely terrible. And, you know, Coby White, for all the points that he scores, and he's improved in terms of his passing this year, but I've never believed in him as like a lead ball handler type. I don't think he's going to be a starter when he's at his best in a few years. I think he's more of a six-man type.
You want to put Lonzo and Zach LaVine in the backcourt together? Team Lightskin?
Yeah, why not? I think it'll make them better.
It could work.
Yeah, I actually don't mind it. I'm talking trash, but I don't mind that at all.
I think Chicago's going to be one of the more active teams come trade deadline, too, because they're sort of like stuck in the middle right now. Like, they're pretty close to 500, but then they lose some games by like 30 points where you're just looking at them like, you have no chance to make the playoffs. So it's time to figure out which guys you want to keep from that core players.
Yeah, just speaking about Chicago, I think one player that will probably be on the move is Thaddeus Young. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up going to a team like Brooklyn.
That would be a good fit. That would be a really good fit. He basically does what Jeff Green does better.
Hey. Let's relax. No one does what Jeff Green does better, okay?
You know, if Jeff Green could learn some consistency in his game, then he would have been a really good player in the NBA. But
he doesn't need consistency. Doesn't need consistency. He just shows up when he needs to.
And he got friends.
Yeah, Game 7 versus Boston.
Yeah, and he has friends. What does he need consistency for? Mm. He's got three All-Stars in front of him, like Hall of Famer level All-Stars. What does he need to be consistent for?
And I'm talking about the totality of his career, okay?
Yeah, no need.
He could have been so much better.
We're living in the present, Josh. Tell that to Shaq. Shaq could have been so much better.
Shaq doesn't know who Jeff Green is.
The guy with the heart surgery?
He'll still call him brother at the end of it, though, no matter what.
Probably. What's your name again, boy? Jeff White?
Jeff White. All right, any spots for Redick real quick? Who needs a shooter? Anybody?
Philadelphia. Put him back on Philly.
Yeah. I think he goes back there, honestly.
I don't know if they can afford him, but that would be great to have him back.
Think about it. Him back with Philly.
You wouldn't have to give up that much for him, though.
Yeah, him back with Philly and Doc? Come on.
Yeah, of course, but, you know, how much does Redick make? He's making $13 million. What are you going to do, send Danny Green to, like, his eighth team in the past year? Come on, man. Between Danny Green like Luke Ridnour out here.
I would. They could ask New Orleans to send a first and Redick for Matisse Thybulle.
Nah, I can't see it. I don't think they trade Thybulle for Redick for like a one-year rental. I think Thybulle is better than that.
I also like the contracts just wouldn't match up.
Yeah, well they would.
Redick's making 13, man.
Yeah, but the idea.
I'm not sure how many teams have like a contract that would sort of match JJ, because a lot of teams like they go top heavy and then they just sign a bunch of like lower level players. You have to find like a specific contract to trade for a $13 million guy.
Yo, bring him to Toronto, man.
He's not coming here.
No.
Imagine having Matt Thomas, Malachi Flynn, and JJ Redick on the same team.
You know, have you seen Redick's numbers this year? He's
how bad are they?
Awful. Oh my god. He's 33% from the field, 30% from three. And
wow.
He's averaging 8 points a game at 20 minutes per game. So he's really trying to lower his value to get out of there, I guess. I don't know. Oof.
Man, maybe he just doesn't work well with Stan Van Gundy anymore. Stan's probably working them too hard. If they're allowed to practice.
But yeah, I think if he gets traded, it's going to be to a contending team or a team that's trying to, you know, contend for, you know, for something at least, like a second round playoff berth or maybe even conference finals.
He's going to end up in LA.
Clippers?
Either of them. Either.
I could see that.
I'm pretty sure they can find a spot for him in either team.
Maybe Indiana?
I mean, Indy would work, I guess, yeah. White guy going to Indiana. He can hang out with Doug McDermott all day.
And
TJ McConnell. They're like best friends.
That'd be perfect.
There it is. Okay. Now we're talking. All right. Anything else you guys wanted to hit before we do Stats Corner?
Is Miami better or worse than last year?
Honestly, like them and Dallas, it's impossible to tell because all their players have been out the entire season, especially with, you know, Jimmy Butler being out the last 2 weeks with COVID.
So, it's a health and safety protocol.
No, sorry.
That's my gripe. Can we just start saying that players have COVID?
Yeah.
Like, goddamn, who cares? Just let the public know. Let the fantasy owners know what their players are dealing with. Clearly, I have Jimmy Butler on my team. And it's just stupid, you know? I'm just tired of waiting every game. Also, stop labeling LeBron and Anthony Davis as questionable every game when they play every game. What is the point? goddamn Lakers,
don't
man.
Don't know. LeBron has taken this playing every game thing very seriously the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's like he heard Danny Green talking shit over the summer, so he shipped his ass out and then decided to play every game.
I think this is more of a long-term play for LeBron. I think once his career ends, he's going to be one of those guys that goes on TV and is like, you know, during that really soft era that I played from in the last couple of years in the NBA, I was one of the only guys, unlike guys like Kawhi Leonard, that actually, you know, actually played every game.
Ah.
I think that's the play here.
So you're saying this is him cleaning his narrative against Kawhi?
I think it's against the entire generation of players or the entire thought process of these teams to sit these players on back-to-backs. I think he's sort of like setting himself up to, you know, be the one player that's at that type of level that actually played every single game. Because you always hear about like Jordan always showing up to every single game because he wanted to see the, he wanted to make sure like the one fan that showed up to come and see him play gets to see him play every night, right?
Yeah.
So I think LeBron's going through the same phase right now.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. I think he's going to use this to his advantage later. And I want to get back to Miami. Are they, just one word answer, are they better or worse than last year?
Wait, I got to get this joke off before we continue with Miami. So you're telling me LeBron is showing up for that one statistician in Oklahoma City to see him play this year?
Yes.
Indeed.
Just so everyone can see him in Oklahoma City.
Or the 50 all fans that showed up yesterday in Cleveland.
All the ops people. Miami, you can't really tell how they are, right? Like, they're so injured. I don't think they've had one game with their full roster. Or if not even their whole roster, like, their normal rotation. At least someone is always out. So I don't know if you can even judge them at this point.
Yeah, they've got some things to figure out. I think ultimately they're probably going to be better if they're healthy come playoff time because Bam has taken another step in his development. Like, he's basically knocked down every single mid-range shot he's taken this year. And he's putting up crazy good numbers, you know, being the primary guy the last few weeks, which can only be a good thing come playoff time. But they still don't really know who their starting four is too, right? So they got some question marks.
Oh, they got Tyler Hero.
He's a power forward now, huh?
Yep. I mean, he basically carried them that game that they only had 7 or 8 players, so why not? He can do everything on the floor, that kid.
He's Tyler Hero.
Is he eating enough to play power forward nowadays?
I don't know, man. He might have COVID. Every player that's out, I'm assuming, has COVID from now on.
On that note, it's pretty amazing how pretty much every player on Miami has been through the protocol except for him.
Hero?
Yeah.
What is he out with?
He's out with a neck injury.
So random.
Yeah, like Spoelstra was complaining after one of the games that they had to play with 8 players, and they basically had to play Hero, I think, 42-plus minutes in that game.
They almost won that game. It was against Philly.
But he hurt his neck in that game because, you know, he was playing too many minutes, wear and tear. But they were really angry they had to play because a lot of teams have gotten away with postponing the games despite only having like 7 or 8 players in that scenario. And Miami had 8, but I think one of them was injured too. And they still had to play that game. So he ended up getting injured in that game. He's been out ever since, I think.
That's pretty much what Philly was afraid of. That game against Denver, right? Like the first one where they only had 8 players. They ended up playing because Mike Scott suited up. And obviously he was never even, like, there was no intention of having him play. He just dressed for the game and they played with 7 guys in the rotation. And that's when the world was introduced to Tyrese Maxey.
Yes, the untradeable Tyrese Maxey.
Now we've been introduced to Gabe Vincent and whoever else Miami has.
That Akpala guy.
Kezi Akpala.
Yeah.
Prince.
And Precious Achiuwa.
Oh, and Max Struss.
Oh, yes. Max. Shout out to our boy Maxie. Looks exactly like him. All right, Josh, let's move on to Stats Corner.
All right, so for Stats Corner this week, we're going to go with a topic going back to, you know, team stats. So for this segment, it's going to be team stats per field goal made. So which team, do you want to go the highest percentage of assists per field goal with the teams or the lowest percentage? So who passes the ball, who doesn't?
Let's do top 3 and bottom 3.
All right, so can you guess the best teams in terms of assisting on their field goals throughout the course of this regular season thus far?
The Denver Nuggets.
The Denver Nuggets are number 7 right now at 63% of their field goals being assisted thus far.
Utah. Just talked about them.
Surprisingly, Utah is number
23. Ah. Wow. So Mitchell, apparently. Joe Ingles.
Him and Conley have been very efficient this year, but I guess a lot of it is off, you know, them being the primary ball handler and just shooting right off the pick.
Oh, also a stats correction. Earlier I said Georges Niang is shooting over 40% from three. He is not. He's shooting like 34. I mixed him up with Joe Ingles. My bad.
Is he the fattest player in the league?
Georges Niang?
No.
Or Joe Ingles?
No, George Niang.
There's no way.
He's a pretty big dude.
He's not the fattest.
He's got a lot of junk in that trunk.
We'll think about this as we keep going. Raj, who you got?
Oof, this is tough. I kind of want to go with the Indiana Pacers.
Indiana's number 11. So I'll give you a hint. One of these teams we just talked about.
Miami?
Miami's number 2. They're 67% of their field goals being assisted, which in large part has to do with, I think, Jimmy Butler being out. Them not really having a guy you can rely on every night. So they go through Bam at the high post, and, you know, he gets a lot of assists that way.
Yeah, with Butler, it might be even higher, man. Butler's an assist man these days.
Yeah, they have an offense where, like, a lot of guys get involved, too. It's not just, like, one guy running pick and roll, so.
All right. Let's go with Golden State.
Golden State's just outside the top three. They're number 4 at 65%. The number 1 team is at 71%, and they really whip the ball around. They're very fun to watch. They're a guard-oriented team from the Eastern Conference, and they've been a league pass darling thus far this year, even though they're about a 500 team.
Rose, you want to take this one or you want me to take it? It's the Charlotte Hornets, isn't it? The Charlotte Jordans.
Charlotte is at number 1 at 71% of their team's field goals being assisted.
Yo, remember when you said LaMelo Ball wouldn't pan out?
He still sucks. I'm not getting off that. He's not going to be a really good starting point guard. Like, he might be a decent starting point guard eventually, but I can't see that disgusting sidewinder Joakim Noah three-point shot going in consistently to make him good enough to be a starting NBA player.
Yeah, he's going to be better than Ricky Rubio. Watch.
That is actually a good comparison for his impact. I think he will be roughly that level.
I think he'll be better than Rubio. At Rubio's peak.
Rubio was really good at his peak, though. Before Kobe destroyed his knee.
I think LaMelo's going to learn how to shoot better than this. Like, remember Lonzo's shot when he came into the league? It was disgusting. It was the same thing.
I mean, Lonzo's shot does look better now, but again, he's shooting like 29% from three this year.
That's where J.J. Redick should go, to Charlotte, so we can teach LaMelo how to shoot.
They do need another shooter off the bench. Could work.
There it is. Give me Dallas.
Dallas is...
No.
Number 27.
Jeez, Peter, you got one of the bottom three, or close to, but...
Yeah, no kidding.
So I'll give you a major hint on this one, because you're not going to get this. Like, I would not have gotten this either. It's one of the teams we talked about last podcast, one of the rising teams, young teams in the NBA.
The Memphis Grizzlies.
Memphis is number 3 right now, and I think a lot of that has to do with Ja being out, and, you know, going back to the Miami thing, a lot of different guys getting involved because they sort of have to play that way. More random offense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not bad. Okay.
So the bottom which teams don't pass the ball now?
Oh, give me the Lakers.
The Lakers are 19th, actually, at 59% of their field goals being assisted.
Stupid LeBron passing the ball.
How about the Washington Wizards?
Washington.
Do they qualify? Have they played enough games?
Thus far, they're 10th in the league.
Wow.
The worst passing team in terms of, like, assisting on their field goals has been like this for the last... ever since they've had their backcourt, basically. That should give you a big hint. Which team has, like, the biggest, you know, scoring duo in the backcourt?
Really Portland. That well. Portland.
Yeah. Portland's the worst thus far at 52%.
All right. What about... Detroit. Jeremy Grant. Hero ball.
Detroit's actually number 8 overall, so they haven't been too bad this year.
Yeah, you went from all backcourt to no backcourt.
So the other team that I'll give you a hint on, they're in the Eastern Conference, and they have probably the best duo in the East, I believe. They run a ton of pick and roll for these guys, and both of them have been really good this year.
Boston Celtics.
Boston is second last at 55%. Portland's at 52%, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Jaylen the last Brown team show, just has, like, zero shooting.
Oh, the Knicks.
Nope. Well, besides that.
No shooting, eh? Who could it be? Who doesn't have shooting?
Think about a team that you've watched this year that runs like a clock toilet offense because their backcourt can't really shoot.
I probably didn't watch them.
The Kings? That's the problem.
The Kings, they are... I don't even
or,
see
oh,
them
the Pelicans. 17. The Pelicans.
Pelicans, bingo, 56%.
I was going to say the Timberwolves. I think D'Angelo Russell isn't passing the ball.
Yeah, they're middle of the pack.
Or D'Angelo Russell's not even playing.
They don't have any field goals to assist off of. Like,
do not qualify because lack of field goal. Yeah. Oh, man. Good stats, Josh. That was a good one this week.
Thank you.
Well done. All right, guys. I think it's time we wrap it up. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. Yeah, and find us on all the major podcast platforms. I'm talking Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher. You can hit us up on Instagram and Twitter at Hoops Corner, not Stretch 4, Hoops Corner Pod. And until next time, peace.